This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The Senate voted to advance the Supreme Court nomination of Brett Kavanaugh this morning. Protesters descended on the Senate building in D.C. yesterday with over 300 arrests. Also, Donald Trump won't show us his tax returns, but the New York Times unearthed tax records that reveal how the president has entered into tax schemes that in many cases appear to be outright fraud. The political junkie Ken Rudin joins us for that and more. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Frank. The tension is really unbelievable when it comes to this Supreme Court nomination. There's no question about that.
It's an incredible saga. It has been going on for a while now. The drama we thought came to a climax with the testimony of Brett Kavanaugh and of course, Christine Blasey Ford. But now the showdown. Let's talk about the FBI findings and which are critical to these votes. What do we know about the FBI report?
Well, I mean, we're not privy to it, of course, but we know that senators have gone on and looked at them. And we know from the comments we've heard from senators that there may be no bombshells. It's very interesting that during last Thursday, a week ago Thursday, when both Dr. Christine Blasey Ford and then Judge Kavanaugh testified, the Democrats were insisting that, you know, we're not going to know anything until we have an FBI investigation. The Republicans fought it. Kavanaugh seemed to fight it. But ultimately, when Jeff Flake said, I'm not going to vote yes at all until we have an FBI investigation, the Republicans and the White House relented. So the FBI had an investigation. The question is, how thorough of an investigation was it? Because once upon a time, the FBI was talking about only interviewing four people. And then when Democrats protested, and then it seemed like President Trump acquiesced, then it was only nine people. So the question is, how thorough was it? When Susan Collins, one of the key senators in this whole thing, came out from looking at the FBI findings, she said, her words were, it seems like a very thorough investigation. So even those who had doubts about the Kavanaugh nomination seems to feel, at least the key senators, seem to feel that what the FBI did was enough. And that's certainly good news for Brett Kavanaugh.
And as you said, though, we will never know what's in the report. So that judgment remains with the senators who've actually seen the report.
That's absolutely correct. And I think, I mean, it almost seems like that if for all the suspense and drama about what the FBI might find, it almost seems like in some ways it was cover for some Republicans who wanted to vote yes to begin with, because you know, in the beginning, they were saying, well, you know, something without an FBI investigation, how can I vote yes? And now that apparently nothing startling is coming out of that investigation at all, it does give more Republicans who may have been on the fence an excuse or an opportunity or a reason to say, well, there's no reason to disqualify Judge Kavanaugh, so I'm voting yes.
All right. Meanwhile, Donald Trump in Mississippi this week ended his uncustomary restraint. We had seen some of that, but that ended when he decided to shame the victim. Tell us about that.
This was, I can't use the word startling because it seemed like vintage Donald Trump. I think the startling thing was, as you say, Frank, the fact that he was so circumspect. For most of the week, he said, look, Christine Blasey Ford seems very credible. She has a story to tell. Let's hear her story. And then he said this over and over again. And then when he goes to this rally on Tuesday in Mississippi, it's basically mocking her like, oh, I only had one beer. Oh, I don't remember how I got home. Oh, I don't remember this. I don't remember that, which mocks the, I mean, not only was it cruel, it did remind me of that mocking of that New York Times reporter with the physical disability, which, of course, the president said was not mocking at all. But it just reminds me of this kind of obnoxious mocking. And what it really does, though, it mocks the whole women's movement, those who have been sexually assaulted, those who have been sexually attacked, who may not remember details, who may be under such trauma that they don't remember every single detail. And yet, instead of showing any kind of understanding, not only did the president just go on and on and on about it, his audience gave him standing ovations, and it was almost like a Roman Colosseum with the cheering and the laughter. It was very unseemly.
Can you talk about the parallels between this confirmation and Clarence Thomas? Let's talk about that, because I think that is an apt comparison here.
it is an apt comparison in the fact that we had a Supreme Court nominee who seemed to be on his way to confirmation, easy confirmation. There were a lot of questions and complaints about Judge Thomas's ideology, but you know, rarely do members of the, unless you're Robert Bork and you may cross some lines, but for the most part, whatever you thought about Judge Thomas's ideology and the fact that he was going to replace Thurgood Marshall, which was a stunning shift from left to right on the court, there was nothing in his background that would disqualify him. And then after the committee voted, it was a 7-7 vote on the Senate Judiciary Committee on Clarence Thomas. That was even before Anita Hill came forward to testify. And then there were accusations, a lot of them uncorroborated, that he sexually harassed her. Now, half the country, maybe even more than half the country, believed her. But in this all-white, all-male Senate Judiciary Committee, they voted, you know, basically, they voted 13-1 to let it go to a full vote, and the vote was 52-48. There is something a little different this time, though, because one, of course, there were four women on the Judiciary Committee. I think the partisanship in this country is far worse now than it was in 1991. And you didn't have the kind of mean, blustering, contentious, contemptuous kind of testimony from the judge. Kavanaugh was seemingly dodging questions, avoiding questions. He basically insulted many of the Democratic members. He was very ideological, talking about that it was all about the Clintons and the left wingers and the people who were upset about Trump winning in 2016. And that sounds like somebody who's not only intemperate but somebody who's very ideological and political. And one thing you do want in a judge, is besides a judicial restraint, is not, you know, ideological purity. And I think that's what we heard from Judge Kavanaugh last Thursday, and that upset a lot of people.
Well, and that brings us, and we can just touch on this very briefly, but the fact that the Supreme Court has in many ways fallen in the eyes of the American people. It was once at least considered the nonpartisan part. Clearly, there were ideologies. Clearly, the president and the parties had some control over who was going to be chosen, although presidents didn't always get who they thought they were going to get. But that idea now has gone completely by the wayside. We understand that the United States Supreme Court is a partisan institution. There's no hiding that anymore, right?
Well, I think a lot of people decided that after 2000, when the 5-4 decision in Bush v. Gore basically said that the Republicans argued for the George W. Bush point, and the four Democrats or liberals backed Al Gore. So, you know, I mean, but we've heard complaints about the Supreme Court in the past. I do remember Richard Nixon at the 1968 Republican convention talking about we need a new Supreme Court. There was always efforts, serious or not, to impeach Earl Warren. Gerald Ford was talking about impeaching William O. Douglas, the liberal Supreme Court justice. But this time it seems like almost every confirmation hearing is a battle of ideologies. And the fact that the court is now part of that left versus right, us against them, the good guys versus the bad guys is quite unfortunate.
Let's talk about this New York Times report that dug into the president's finances and his family's tax reports. Fascinating stuff.
It is fascinating. And I read everything I could find on it, which was amazing. I mean, basically, it upends the Donald Trump claim from the beginning that this was all, he's a self-made billionaire. He got some help from his father, but as it turned out, he got $413 million of help from his father. Donald Trump apparently was a millionaire by the time he turned 3 years old. Mm. And I don't think that was on his own. Right?
Not even a genius like Donald Trump could have pulled that off. Yeah.
Exactly. But I mean, schemes to dodge taxes, these sham corporations they put up, the improper deductions, the obvious avoidance of gift and inheritance taxes. I mean, it seems like they did everything that they could to just hide their wealth and increase their wealth. And I mean, God bless them, but a good part of it seemed quite unethical, shall we say, at the minimum.
Quite unethical and possibly illegal, at least at the time, statute of limitations on the criminal charges that apparently would come from setting up shell corporations that issue false receipts in order to jack up the you know, your deductions and all of that. Obviously past the criminal liability because of the statute of limitations. But the New York State Department of Taxation and Finance is reviewing some of these allegations. So that's kind of interesting, too, huh?
That is, I mean, that's probably the only penalty he could find other than the penalty of public opinion. And it could result in millions of dollars of civil fines. We'll see what New York comes up with.
All right. And as you said, we've grown used to this. I mean, the fact that he didn't issue, you know, he's not going to reveal his tax returns. Everybody knows what that means. And yet, you know, this doesn't pay a penalty for this, for the mocking and that sort of thing. So what's fascinating, too, is that there seems to be no political penalty for all of this when it comes to somebody like Donald Trump.
Well, look, we've said that with the Access Hollywood report. We've seen that with the attacks on women and Muslims and John McCain. So ultimately, there is no consequence for Trump. There is no penalty. And we'll just see what voters in 2018 have to say about Republican rule in 2020. But ultimately, Donald Trump personally, we always talked about Ronald Reagan with being the Teflon president. Donald Trump will say these outrageous things and do outrageous things, and so far he has not paid the price, certainly not politically.
The political junkie, Ken Rudin. Thank you so much, Ken.
Thanks, Frank. See you next week.
See you soon.
Soon. You're right.
A couple of weeks from now. But it's always a pleasure. Just ahead, we're going to learn why a cigarette tax could end up harming your health. Talk about that on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.